digging up animal bones can teach us a lot about the Middle Ages. In fact, zooarchaeologists are able to make them speak. Hello and welcome to the Medieval Grad Podcast. It's a podcast brought to you by Medievalist.net, where we meet and chat with graduate students from all over the world to learn about the new trends and the future of research in medieval studies. I'm Lucie Lemonnier, a medieval historian and the podcast's host. Today, I'm talking with Erin Crowley-Champeau, a PhD candidate in anthropology from the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, and her advisor is Dr. Peter Wells. Hello, Erin. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Although you're studying in anthropology, you're actually a zooarchaeologist. Could you tell us what it means?
Yeah, so anthropology is kind of a large umbrella, and there are four primary subfields: sociocultural anthropology, linguistic anthropology, biological anthropology, and archaeology. Or at least that's how it's conceived of in the United States. And I'm an archaeologist by training, and then my research is zooarchaeological. So archaeology is the study of humans through material culture, and then zooarchaeology is the study of animal bones from archaeological sites. So I use animal bones to learn more about human behavior.
I noticed on your CV that you partook in a lot of research on various sites around the globe, like you did excavations in Ireland, in the US, and even in Peru. So what brought you to studying medieval history and doing medieval archaeology?
So I first became interested in archaeology when I was very young, and my first experiences in archaeology were in sort of my home area in New Jersey when I was in high school. And then in undergrad, I have very myopically pursued history and archaeology and anthropology. I minored in Latin. And through that process, I studied abroad in Ireland. And in doing so, I learned more about Irish archaeology and some of these very fascinating questions that sort of percolated through. And one of them was the development of a dairying economy in the transition between the Iron Age and the early medieval period. In Ireland, the Iron Age begins around 700 BC, and then it ends in 431 AD. So that is the letter for the mission of Palladius to the Irish. So it's the arrival, quote unquote, of Christianity to Ireland. You know, to me, there were a lot of questions, and I really want to know how elaborate a system developed. The answers that we had didn't really seem sufficient to me, and so that's sort of how I got started.
And could you tell us about the nuts and bolts of your work? Like, what do you do when you have the animal bones ready to be analyzed?
Yeah, so in the fields, they're collected by hand during excavation. They can also be collected afterwards in soil sample remains through flotation. You get the really small bones that way. When I get them, they're dry, they're clean, generally, hopefully, and they're in bags according to context and unit. So I have tight sort of spatial control over where those remains are coming from. And I can pinpoint both, you know, X and Y and Z axes where in the site they're coming from. And they're in big bags. So what I do is I get a big bag and I just pull out each bone. And then on my table, I divide them into sort of different species. So I have the cows over here, the pigs over here, the dogs over here. And then whatever bones I have that have cut marks on them, I put them aside. Or cut marks, burning. Sometimes I get tools, decorations. I found some beautiful pins. That's always really exciting when you get a bone tool. It's fun. And then I have a computer program. So I use FileMaker Pro. I've developed an application in FileMaker to help me collect data. So I input each bone gets a unique identifying number. And that's input, and then I put in the contextual information, and then I say, who is it, what bone is it, what side is it, does it have any marks on it? And then I have a separate application where I record all the information on the cut marks. And then if it's an unusual bone, an interesting bone, or it has cut marks or any kind of modification, I'll take pictures of it. And then I label those pictures with the unique identifying number to kind of bring it all together.
Let's turn to your PhD project. Your dissertation is entitled Cattle, Food, and the Rise of Early Ireland. And as you mentioned, you look at the dairying economy in the Iron Age and early Middle Ages in Ireland through the analysis of archaeological and zooarchaeological remains. Would you give us a broad overview of your project?
Yeah, so I have two primary methods. My first method is a comparative analysis. So I've collected faunal reports from excavated sites in Ireland, sort of across the island, primarily through construction projects. So probably something like 90% of the archaeology that's done is ahead of road construction or housing development. So there's a ton of work done, and it's done by highly skilled archaeologists, and they have specialist analyses of the wood and the metal and the material culture and the bones. But for the most part, these reports are cataloged and archived, and then they're used by other commercial firms, but they're not used as much academically. So I've been going through those reports and looking at the composition of the animal bone collections, so seeing if they are more or less diverse and then more or less even, to sort of identify economic strategies, and then seeing how that changes over time. So that's sort of a very broad view. And it is kind of difficult because the Iron Age is sort of classically this enigmatic period where we don't have very many settlement sites. But what I found is that there are certainly a number of sites that meet this threshold of animal bones that we can start saying something about it. And then we certainly have many more in the early medieval period. So being able to compare between the earlier and the later has been really useful. So that's one part of it. And then the other part, I'm working on the faunal analysis for a site at Ninch in County Meath. So this site is about 38 kilometers north of Dublin, and it's right on the water. I mean, it's beautiful. You look out and there's just ocean. It's like half a kilometer from the beach, and it's about 1 or 2 kilometers from a river. So it's a really rich landscape, fertile agricultural fields. And there was a housing development constructed in the late 90s, early 2000s, and there was an excavation, and it was this incredibly rich settlement site that had occupation and burial from maybe the 3rd or 4th century AD through the 9th or 10th centuries AD. So because of economic downturn starting in 2010, as we all kind of experienced, a lot of these projects got backburnered because they ran out of funding. And then unfortunately the company that ran this excavation went under. It had to go into liquidation, and the museum ended up rescuing the materials and keeping them in their facilities. At the same time, the museum doesn't have the funding or the staff to analyze all the material. I mean, it was an incredible amount of material coming out of these sites. So they're kind of in storage. And then what I'm doing is the analysis is going to be able to move some of those materials out of that general storage and into the museum collections.
As we learned already, animal remains are part of your sources material. And animal remains can tell us a great lot about past societies, such as what sort of meat did people eat, if the animals were raised locally or were imported from the hinterland, whether people hunted or raised cattle to procure meat. So in the context of early medieval Ireland, what do animal bones tell you about the society they lived in?
Yeah, so it's a fully agricultural society, so the vast majority of the remains we have are from domestic livestock, so cattle, sheep, goats, sheep and goats. They're very hard to distinguish by the bones. So sheep/goats and horses and pigs and horses. And then we have small amounts of dogs, cats, hare, birds, fish, some rodents, and deer. A lot of antlers. So for craft production, but antlers, because they're shed annually, they could just be picked up. But we do have some like very limited evidence of hunting. So some non-antler bones that show up. So they can tell us both about the hunting practices, fishing practices. I've recently found some really interesting, very large cod remains. So thinking about what offshore fishing looked like in the early medieval period, which we don't really know very much about. So that was really interesting. There's some fascinating use of whale bones, a couple of sites. So whales beach naturally in the British Isles, but then how the communities use those remains in sort of craft production and domestic use. But my primary interest is looking at the use of cattle. So with the domestic livestock, we can look at different products that they were trying to achieve. So for sheep and goats, whether they're using milk or meat or wool, horses are for traction typically, so plowing or transportation. Pigs are kind of, honestly, they're kind of a one-trick pony. They're used for meat. They don't do much else. But cattle, you can use them for meat, for milk, and for traction. So they can also be used to plow. And I'm interested in what communities are producing cattle for meat and what communities are producing cattle for dairy. And looking at, first, how the production of cattle as a form of wealth developed. So you just have cattle around and you can look at the demographics, so which cattle are male and female and old and young, to understand that a bit better. And then also how the production of dairy is a really effective means of controlling economic practice and by elites. So you're producing a product and you're looking for a product that extends the productive life of cattle and limits how you can manage your herd. And so you're not just accumulating more and more cattle and gaining more wealth, but it's restricted in these really interesting ways.
But how do you know when you look at a bone that that cow was used for milk and this cow was used for meat?
You can look for a couple of different things. So you can look for the evidence of cut marks.
Well, yeah. Obviously, yeah. Well, yeah. I didn't think about that.
And where the cut marks occur, because sometimes cut marks, you can have cut marks that indicate skinning, so producing leather or parchment, things like that. So where the cut marks occur, how frequently the cut marks occur, so you can see like what cuts of meat they were looking for, how frequently they were eating, say, cattle versus pigs or sheep. And then you can also look at demographics. So meat herds tend to have slaughter at a younger age and so more males in the assemblage, mm-hmm. whereas dairy herds have a high spike of juveniles slaughtered. So right around the time of weaning, it's easier to slaughter the calf and then eat that meat and then keep the cow for milk and later in its life. So you have a high slaughter of juveniles and then a high slaughter of older female cattle. So looking at those demographics. And you can identify age two ways, through the fusion of the bones and then also through tooth wear. So we can get age from the teeth. And then there are a couple of sexually dimorphic traits. And then we can also look at how animals were used for traction, for pulling, based on pathologies. So the ways, you know, injuries or age-related diseases on the bone, so arthritis in cows.
It's really fascinating, and it inspires me something that's not really relevant. But, you know, I like mystery novels with a lot of science. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of anthropologist studying human bones for police work and what you do. I think it's really kind of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's bones for cows.
Yeah. So let's go back to your dissertation. What were the main changes between the Iron Age and the early Middle Ages in terms of economy or society, at least, you know, from the standpoint of the animal bones?
Yeah, one of the big markers of or archaeological footprints of the Iron Age, or the early medieval period in Ireland, is the sort of rapid fluorescence of settlement sites. So we go from maybe 300 in the Iron Age to 40,000 in the early medieval period, and the vast majority were constructed in the 5th and 6th centuries AD. So sort of rapid resettlement, and perhaps not rapid resettlement, but sort of rapid elaboration of settlements. So we have banks and ditches being constructed around farmsteads. So that becomes a big deal. And then with that, in the early medieval period from texts, we also know that there is a complex system of political relationships. So trying to identify that before a period of texts is more difficult. What I've been finding is that the changing economic strategies that we see start much earlier. So they're starting in that late Iron Age, from the first 81 to 8500. So in that period, we're seeing greater emphasis on the production of cattle, and likely for as a means of producing cattle wealth. So it's starting earlier, but it's kind of a slow process. So what looked to be initially a very rapid and intense change is actually the product of these longer processes.
I have a follow-up question about the bones. I'm wondering if you kind of find them more in trash pits or other places?
Yeah, you can find them in trash pits. At this site, they're kind of scattered all over the place, but a lot of them are found in the extramural ditches. So the settlement is defined by banks and ditches, and people are kind of dumping the food remains into the ditch on kind of like the outside of the wall. So yeah, I guess they are kind of in and of themselves midden sites, so trash pits.
It's so interesting, all the things you can dig up from the trash. And you know, I think our listeners won't look at their food waste the same way after listening to the podcast.
There was a project in the 1970s at the University of Arizona, William Rathje. It was the Garbology Project. And that's exactly what he did. He and his students followed, on trash days, they'd follow around the trash truck and then take people's trash and then look at them like an excavation. Yeah. And then they came to conclusions about the purchasing practices of the community. And then they did follow-up interviews with the households and then compared what the household thought that they were eating and throwing away versus what they were actually eating and throwing away. And it was interesting, like, what the discrepancies were.
Wow, that was quite the project. So, Erin, before we say goodbye, I would like to ask you the dreaded question.
Okay.
And that question is, what advice would you give to a prospective grad student in archaeology?
That's a much better... I thought you were going to ask when I was going to be finished. I was like, oh, God.
No, I would never do that.
So what advice do I have? It's easy to dislike your project. What is valuable is finding the new and interesting things about the same stuff you've been looking at for months and months and months and getting excited about it again. It's also important to develop a network of students. So I've been involved with the Consortium for the Study of the Premodern World at the University of Minnesota, and the Premodern Workshop. So it's a collection of graduate students from different fields and different departments that are all working on pre-modern things, a lot of medievalists, and workshopping pieces with them has been massively valuable. So having those connections and collaborations and getting a new perspective on your own work also helps to help you not hate it.
Well, thank you, Erin. It was really a pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
That was Erin Crowley-Champeau, a PhD candidate in anthropology from the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. Her info is in the show notes. Stay with us, because the show isn't over yet. It's time for the second segment of the Medieval Grad podcast, where I talk with Peter Konieczny from medievalist.net. Hello, Peter. How are you? What did you think of the interview?
This is a topic I hear about all the time, actually, on medievalist.net, because a lot of scholars, a lot of researchers are putting out news about what they're discovering from research on animal bones, fish bones, things like that. So yeah, you can kind of find, you know, how people ate, and I find that really fascinating. We can learn, you know, from this rubbish pile where they were getting their fish from. Yeah, it was 1,000 miles away they were getting their fish, and this makes this kind of trade develop and things like that. So it's really, really interesting. So I'm glad she's working in Ireland. I haven't seen too much about like what's happening in Ireland with the zoo archaeology. So yeah, I think that would be a pretty cool topic.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, we hear a lot about that, because I guess sometimes hard science got more press than sort of soft science, because they are giving us very concrete details about what was happening. They kind of have, hard proof, and so helps getting the word out.
Indeed. Like, I think there's such an emphasis on STEM kind of research, and it's kind of entered the medieval studies era too. If you can find a way to incorporate like researchers from abroad kind of disciplines, it becomes easier to get funding and promotion and things like that. So everyone's kind of jumped on that kind of bandwagon. So I've seen like a great paper at the Kalamazoo like online version where someone was talking about medieval manuscript covers and where they were made. And she discovered like half of them from this like 13th century Cistercian abbey were made of seal skin.
Oh.
Yeah, seal skin. And the seals, you can figure out like which kind of type of seal and where they would have come from. So a lot of them were coming from Norway, but there was stuff like even from like Iceland and Greenland.
Wow.
Like showing up. So she was just able to kind of go in and take a look at, get some samples, and yeah, boom.
Yeah, and also it's a reminder that medieval societies, well, they were not waste-free, but they used nearly all the parts of animals to do various things. So we can find remains of animals in, like, well, of course, needles, or as you said, manuscripts, covers. They are everywhere.
Yeah, the early version of skates were made of bones.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there's a book, it came out, maybe like 15 years ago, but Vicky Sazwell, and she wrote, like, it's called Monstrous Fishes and the Mead Dark Sea Whales in Medieval North Atlantic. And like, that was kind of my first kind of introduction to the way they use animals and incorporating that into the research. So yeah, like I think there's quite a lot there. Like, I think, you know, we'll be talking about this like for the rest of our careers. Is we'll be hearing about, oh, we discovered this, we discovered that. So yeah, Erin's got a good future on her hand.
Yeah, and I hope we have more episodes with hard science involved. So thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks.
You are listening to the Medieval Grad podcast, brought to you by medievalist.net. If you want to support us and this podcast, you can subscribe to our Patreon, www.patreon.com/medievalists. You can get a lot of very neat benefits on Patreon, including being able to hear these episodes early. We love doing this show and we really appreciate your help. I'm Lucie Lemonnier. You can find me on Instagram. My handle is @thefrenchmedievalist. And you can also look me up on academia.edu. Thank you for tuning in. Goodbye. Au revoir.